This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
He's Scott Petrak from BrownZone.com. And right now he's on the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. Hello, Scott. How are you?
Scott.
Hey, guys. How are you doing?
Good, good. We're looking through Brown Zone, as we do each and every week. And, you talked a little bit about the gaps at wide receiver and the defensive line if they did enough in the draft. And Jeff and I were just talking about that at wide receiver in light of the Jarvis Landry news that it looks like he is 100% not coming back now and they're not going to be able to be. You know what? After the Deshaun Watson thing, I don't think that I'm ever going to say 100% ever again, because I thought they were out on Deshaun too. So I don't know if I should go down that road ever again. But what do you think? First of all, let's talk about Jarvis not coming back. What kind of impact would that have on the team, and does it have on the team?
Yeah, I mean, it has an impact for sure, and I think it's on and off the field. Not only was he highly productive when he was healthy, and for the most part, he was healthy, right? He didn't miss a game from injury. He missed that one COVID game in 2020, but he'd never missed a game for injury in his career until last year. So he was reliable, productive. I think he was a leader in that locker room, worked really hard. Coaches raised about him, teammates raised about him. So I do think his presence will be missed. But the reality is, when the Browns chose to cut him and not pay the nearly $15 million in salary, which also saved them a bunch of cap money, almost $15 million, that meant the odds of him coming back were not very good. You know, and I know it's been out there that maybe he could come back, and obviously, he hasn't signed with anybody yet, but the Browns chose not to pay him, decided he wasn't worth that money, and I think that was the end of it. And now you have to go about figuring out how you're going to have a receiver room that's going to be productive, and Amari Cooper was a huge part of that, and then drafting David Bell was another big part of that.
If you were Jarvis, first of all, I would think that last year kind of drove him nuts. You know, he was always asked the Odell questions and everything else, and then Odell gets cut. At that point, he's got to feel that it's time to check out, I would think. And then he doesn't get his option picked up. I would think the Browns were like his safety valve option if there was ever anything happening. But Scott, how difficult do you think last year was on him?
Yeah, I think it was really hard. And, you know, I mentioned injuries that he'd never really had to deal with to this extent, right? I mean, he fought through a bunch of injuries, but that where he missed time. And then he came back. You guys remember, he came back, I don't know if early is the right word, but he hustled back to play in that Thursday night game, I think it was. And then he gets hurt again. Like, he kind of tweaks the knee and wasn't the same. And then, you're right, he went through all that Odell stuff where, you know, the big breakup with Odell, and then he didn't want to talk about it. Like, we talked to him at his fundraising thing for Thanksgiving, and that was the only time Jarvis talked after Odell was cut. And to me, that was, you know, I think he's been on social media saying it had nothing to do with that. Well, yeah. I'm not buying that. I think it was related to that. He didn't want to talk about it. He didn't want to pick sides between Odell and Baker. And so, yeah, I think last year was extremely tough. Not to mention, Jarvis is about winning, right? And he was thinking this was a team capable of going to the Super Bowl, right? He thought when Odell came here in 2019, that they would have a Super Bowl quality team, and they only went to the playoffs with the one time. Obviously, the Odell thing didn't work out. So I think it was really difficult for Jarvis. You know, I think, whatever, down the road, he'll be able to look back on his time in Cleveland and think that it was productive and that it was a good time for him, right? And he helped lead this turnaround, because I do think he was a big part of leading the turnaround, especially culturally. But I think right now it's a disappointment. You know, he got hurt at the end. It didn't work out with Odell. That was a terrible breakup. And then the team decided not to pay him that big money at the end. So I think it was really difficult for Jarvis, and I'm sure he'll be highly motivated wherever he lands this year.
We went over some of the available free agents who are still out there, Scott, and nobody's overly inspiring out of the group. There are so many wide receivers who have already signed somewhere else. I still think, and I'm really intrigued by David Bell, and I like Donovan Peoples-Jones, and Schwartz is intriguing, you know, with his speed. But and if they all hit and they end up becoming something, I think the Browns are set at wide receiver, but there's no guarantee of that. I would still like to bring in some veteran with some level of productivity on his resume. Do you think that's a possibility? Do you think they're going to do that, or are they going to roll the dice and give DeSean, Amari Cooper, and three, though talented and interesting, but three question marks?
Yeah, that's certainly interesting, Jeff. I think if the price is right, they would bring in the right veteran, you know, and there's guys out there, and I don't know if there's guys that automatically slide into that number two spot. You know, if when we were talking about Jarvis possibly returning, it was okay, well, he's your number two, and then everybody slides back down.
Right.
You know, is Will Fuller that guy? Is T.Y. Hilton still that guy? You know, there's those types of players that are out there. But, so yeah, for the right price, if you could get a guy for, you know, 1 year and $3 million, yeah, maybe Andrew Berry would do that. But I do think the numbers that he threw at that position in the offseason, right, drafting David Bell and then drafting Michael Woods after that. Jakeem Grant, I know we talk about him as a returner, but he's had some production as a receiver, so he's in that mix. They like Donovan Peoples-Jones. They like Anthony Schwartz, right? They feel like there's an upside to them. And I think as a fan, you kind of look at it and go, those guys haven't done enough yet. You know, we need a proven number two. And I get that thinking, but I just think I know that the thinking is different inside that building, right? They look at Donovan Peoples-Jones and say, hey, we forecast him to be a really worthy part of this team, right? And that's the number two or number three. We think he can fill that role. They didn't draft Anthony Schwartz in the third round to be a fourth or fifth receiver, right? So I think you do have to keep that in mind. And I think that when they look at this receiving core, they say, hey, we can line up on week one with Amari Cooper, Donovan Peoples-Jones, David Bell, and Anthony Schwartz as our top four and feel pretty good about it. Not to mention, you made an upgraded quarterback, assuming Deshaun Watson is eligible to play, and he will help everyone involved. Plus, we have three backs that we really like. We got a couple tight ends we like. So I'm not sure they feel like that hole, if you wanted to call it a hole at number two, is as big as some of the people on the outside think.
All right, let's switch over to the other side of the ball, Scott. And, you know, I think we're all kind of hoping Jadeveon Clowney wants to come back and they can renegotiate and figure out a one-year deal. Are we comfortable with Chase Winovich maybe starting on the right-hand side and Miles on the left? Obviously, we're comfortable with Miles, but is that a good look? And then where are we? Like, I don't have a ton of confidence on the, even with the draft pick, I don't have a ton of confidence on the interior of the defensive line.
Yeah, I mean, I'm with you. I don't, it's all these issues that we were talking about heading into the draft. And yes, they address them to some degree. But when you start addressing those positions at number 78, right, then I don't know how good you feel about, okay, those are taken care of, right? And those are no longer weaknesses. So I think from an outside perspective, the Browns are kind of at the same spot they were heading into the draft, and that certainly applies to the defensive line. You know, when you talk about the interior, they think that Perry and Winfrey is going to come in and have an impact. And, okay, if you put him next to Jordan Elliott, who really hasn't done a lot in 2 years, but, again, was a third-round pick, they traded for Taven Bryan, who kind of was a bust in Jacksonville, but maybe you can rediscover something. Like, again, they're throwing numbers at the situations, and maybe that's fine, but I feel like if you brought in one stud at defensive tackle, right, one proven guy, then you just feel better about that situation. Everybody kind of slides back one notch, and you're not relying on Perry and Winfrey to be productive right away, right, and make an impact right away. You're not relying on Taven Bryan to find something that he wasn't able to find in Jacksonville. So I agree with you when you're talking about the interior of the defensive line. When it comes to end, you know, I don't think Winovich would be the starter. I think it would be a combination of Alex Wright. Is he ready to play on first and second down and stop the run? Is a rookie out of UAB? Or Steven Weatherly, who's been around a long time and is kind of a run-stuffing big end. And then on third down, you could see some Winovich, right? So I think they feel like they can ham and egg it there, but it also leads you to think that, man, if they brought Clowney back at the right price for a one-year deal, then everybody else slides back into position. You don't have to force right in too early. And then there's a lot of competition to see if guys make the roster, right? Is there a guarantee? You know, because then it becomes a numbers game. If you bring Clowney in, okay, then Wright's your number three. Is Winovich your number four? And they have other guys. You know, they drafted Isaiah Thomas. They signed Isaac Rochelle. So all of a sudden, then you have a lot of competition for those final spots. But if you don't sign Clowney, then it's okay. It's going to have to be a combination of, you know, Wright, Weatherly, Winovich, Rochelle, and then a lot of that falls on Miles then. Miles has to be super productive on the other side because you don't have a guy like Jadeveon Clowney on the other side.
Scott, other than the quarterback situation, to me, the most interesting thing that will happen with this team this year is the head coach. A one season for Kevin that exceeded expectations, one that didn't reach expectations. What are the expectations this year, you think, from ownership? And can he adapt to a change in personnel?
I think those are great questions, Jeff. I think the expectations from ownership are exceedingly high. And that's what happens when you put your neck out there to go get a guy like Deshaun Watson. And, you know, from a publicity, you know, from a public relations standpoint, from a draft pick standpoint, and from a $230 million fully guaranteed standpoint,
yeah,
right? That means, hey, expectations are incredibly high, and we're putting it on you as a coach and as a GM, right? If you're Andrew Berry, you got to figure out a way to win with this guy. We got you. We gave you the ammunition to go get this piece. Now go win with it. And I think your second part of your question is exactly right. It becomes on Kevin Stefanski now to figure out the right way to get the most out of Deshaun Watson and the rest of this roster. And I think that certainly includes a tweaking at the least to a modified overhaul of his system, right? I think we're going to see far fewer 2 and 3 tight end sets. And I think that was driven home when the Browns did not draft another tight end, right? They have David Njoku, Harrison Bryant, and a couple other guys, right? So I just don't think we're going to see a lot of 3 tight end personnel like we did last year. And that's a big shift, right? Do they have a fullback this year? I mean, they have Johnny Stanton, but they don't have Andy Janovich. They let him go after the season, you know, and we saw less fullback even a year ago. So I would not be surprised if we saw a lot more of the 3 receivers. You know, we talked in with David Bell, they talk about him playing in the slot. Okay, well, if he's in the slot, then you have Cooper and somebody else on the outside, probably Peoples-Jones or Schwartz at that other spot. So I do think you're going to see a change. You're going to see your quarterback on the move a lot more just because that plays to his strengths, assuming Deshaun Watson's playing for you. So then, therefore, the pressure does go on Kevin Stefanski to see if he can make those changes. And I believe he's plenty smart, and I think he was using the system that he brought from Minnesota because it fit what the Browns personnel was. So, you know, I do, if I were a Browns fan, I would have confidence that Kevin Stefanski will be able to make these changes. It remains to be seen, and I think that does add a lot of pressure to a guy coming off a disappointing season for him and the team.
Let me wrap it up with this question. There was a story that came out last week about Deshaun Watson and, you know, what ultimately could be the punishment for what's going on. And we know that, you know, if it hits a phase where there could be punishment here between the NFL and the NFLPA, that it's going to be listened to by U.S. District Court Judge Sue Robinson first, which is a part of the new CBA. And then the story as it went last week was that, and it was, I think it was more clarified, and I kind of thought I knew it, but it seemed to have more clarity after Florio wrote about it in Pro Football Talk, that if Robinson decides there is no reason to suspend and there is no fine or anything like that, then it stands that nothing will happen to Deshaun Watson. If Robinson says, hey, it's a 2-game suspension, it's a 4-game suspension, that's just kind of whatever the league wants to do. The league can either accept her recommendation or they can go, nah, you know, it's 2-year suspension. Roger Goodell can do whatever he wants. Knowing that, maybe having a little bit of that information, does that change your mind or what you think eventually will happen with Deshaun Watson, whether he gets suspended or doesn't?
Not really. The way the NFL hands down punishment is so arbitrary. It feels so arbitrary. I'm sure if you asked Roger Goodell, he would fight you on that. But, you know, it's different for different – you know, there's different punishment for seemingly the same crime. You know, I think the fact that the NFLPA has a role in the initial stage, right, it's a jointly appointed someone that decides the punishment. I think that helps from a player perspective. But if Goodell then has final say, that I don't know if I feel any different about it. To me, the biggest question remains, will the NFL hand down a punishment before there's resolution in the civil lawsuits, assuming we don't have resolution by, you know, the start of the season? And I think that's the question, whether the NFL feels comfortable saying, yes, we're going to suspend or not suspend Deshaun Watson for X number of games, when there could be trials, multiple trials, where there's testimony and that becomes public. And then, man, did we overreact or did we underreact? And I think that remains the biggest question to be seen.
A lot of answers. We're still looking for them, and hopefully we'll know something by the time the season starts. Scott, thank you, of course, for reading your BrownZone.com every day, and we always appreciate your time, my friend.
Thanks, buddy.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Scott. And Scott, of course, on the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.